How's it going, everyone? You're listening to Free Kick, the official AFLW fantasy podcast. I'm Mel, and today I'm joined by the whole Free Kick gang as we look at our week 2 review slash week 3 preview. So, after the second week of footy, how did you guys find it, or which games did you get to? Might start with you, Jono.
I got down to Hawthorn Carlton on Saturday night, which was good fun. Probably the stillest night of footy I've ever had down in Kinetic Stadium, which was nice. And very sloppy. I'm still not over this holding the ball rule change. I think there were some outrageous ones both ways, to be fair. But I'm hoping they do something about it soon, because that was killing me.
At least you got to see a win. That's always good in person. I did.
Yeah. And always good fun. I think. And I got to see Laura Stone shine, which was very fun. She looked Shiny excellent. Stone. Yeah, and I thought it would be shared, but she seemed to have that Fleming role locked up all by her lonesome. So keen to talk about her later.
A real diamond in the rough there.
That's the joke.
So many
buttons. That was the joke, Mel. That was the setup. Shiny Stone.
I'm a magpie. Well, speaking of wins, Liam, you got to see.
You just said speaking of magpies and you didn't throw to me.
Will, it was at the magpie game. I was there too, actually, but sure.
Okay, well, whoever wants to talk then, you choose.
Liam, off you go.
Well, I made it to two games. I went down early to Collingwood GWS, if only because I was going to be passing through there on my bike anyway, and figured, well, let's try and figure out where Ash Centra and Zali Goldsworthy are warming up, not which position groups they are in. Which, you know, Zali confirmed midfield, never had a stress. Ash Centra warmed up with the midfield, was then like poking at her hip, was doing like a less than normal warm-up with Lucy Cronin, and then started in the first CBA. So, like, did it matter for anything? Not really. I ended up trading her out. And then, yeah, I made it down to Windy Hill, which, God, that's stressful. I agree as well, Jono. I'm not exactly sure on the differences game to game on the holding the ball rule. And I'm also not sure that the umpires are aware that the boundary line at Windy Hill, if you've ever seen it like on the camera footage, it's not like perfectly straight along the boundary side nearest to the cameras. And there was at least two balls that were a good like foot over the boundary line from where I could absolutely see that were given as marks to West Coast. So certainly was frustrating. Good to get a win though with 10 seconds left.
That boundary does go on about a right angle as well.
It just has this weird, like, triangle, like, weird, just like, yep, little knee bend as it goes towards forward 50.
My gut feel from watching a few minutes of that game was that they seemed to not really care about this new holding the rule interpretation and just let there be ruck stoppages all the time. What was your interpretation from the game, more or less?
It certainly felt like there were more. It just felt very inconsistent which ones were deemed holding the ball. I can never. There's just not that same innate sense, and that could just be inexperience. Like I think we're all used to like a certain timing on like ball gets to someone, then tackle arrives. Well, I can't be holding the ball because like they had nothing. And it feels like for some games that's just been shortened, but then in others, yeah, it's just all over the place.
Even within games, with the Hawks game, there was three umpires on the field. Two of them were paying free kicks left, right, and center. And one was paying them normally. And I was just blown away that it was, even within the game, it depended who was the primary umpire looking after it.
Crazy. Well, you two both had a win, which was nice. I won't talk for too long about myself because Frio almost had their most flogged award updated from their season 6 score against Melbourne of the 105 record for the highest AFLW score. Brisbane were threatening to do it again and refresh Frio's status there, but they only got to 105, but that was a pretty painful watch. So I actually didn't get to any games. It was a pretty busy weekend, unfortunately, but tuned in to watch that until I frustratingly turned it off. But Will, I'd like to say your team had a win, but I mean, if we just think about the first three quarters, Geelong played great. And scores were looking great.
2 weeks in a row, they have indeed played three really good quarters against a good team and then just decided the fourth quarter doesn't matter. But we're not talking about Geelong right now. We're talking about Collingwood, because I was at the Collingwood GWS game and Collingwood won, which was super exciting. So very happy to throw up the Collingwood flag this time. Nice. Yes, Collingwood GWS. It was a glorious day at the footy. An entertaining game. Tani Evans started up forward early. Zali Goldsworthy through the middle. Love that. And Ash Centra, as you said, Liam, did play a bit through the midfield. And when they get the ball in her hands, she looks exceptional. So hopefully a bit more midfield time for Ash Centra going forward once her fitness builds up a bit. But yes, unfortunately, my Cats didn't quite hold on for the four-quarter effort. So it'll be interesting to see how they go at home against the Swans this week, because they are in some pretty rare form.
Yeah, Swans are quick becoming one of the most exciting teams to watch. So that'll be a good one. In terms of our fantasy scores, also a very exciting week. Absolutely huge scores all round. Just kept threatening, like, oh, 1,300, oh, 1,400, oh, Jono's into 1,500. Jono, you finished almost 1,600. I think we're going to go top down because we have to talk about this. My God.
Yeah, top down. It was a crazy week of scoring. I think this is not just my highest score, if we ignore the double weeks last year, not just my highest score, but my highest score by about 150 points across the entirety of this competition. So ended up with a 1,594, a weekly ranking of 92, which brings me overall to 416th, up a good 3,800 odd ranks. So a very, very good round for me.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of good calls across the board, which I'm happy to report, but I think the one that I'm happiest with was Eden Zanker. It was a preseason call, and I think Melbourne had a great game, and she ended up on 96. So I think that Melbourne forward line is something that I'm looking very closely at with their run coming up. On the other side of things, my bad call was Shelley Heath, and really, that's disappointing because it was a trade-in this week. Only put up the 50 and ended up being my second lowest scorer after 100 last week.
I mean, yeah, we couldn't have seen Heath coming because she was looking so good last week. And Melbourne put up some absolutely huge scores. Like Liv Purcell, before she went down, she was on 75 in what, like the somewhere in the second quarter? Like she was on track for a massive score.
She played 39% game time for 19 disposals.
Huge. So, yeah, absolutely massive week for you then, Jono. Love to see that. Who is next up? I think it's Will.
It sure is. I scored a 1,559 this week. Very happy with that. A weekly rank of 296. Puts me just ahead of Jono in the overall rankings at 375, going up by about 1,700 ranking points. I'm actually going to start with my bad call because my bad call was having 226s on field. So it's kind of a what could have been almost in terms of my one, because I didn't trade Ange Stannett thinking, you know what, I'll give her another run. First game back, hopefully she'll go a bit better. Nope, put up a 26. And I once again picked the wrong ruck, Courtney Murphy, also scoring 26. So I've managed to put together a pretty decent score even with those two 26s on the field. And a lot of that has actually come from my good call, which was trading Ebony Marinoff to Jazz Garner. Marinoff didn't disappoint by any stretch, scored 129, but Jazzy Garner, 6 goals, 31 disposals, and 158 points as captain was really nice, given that I'd staked a lot on that trade.
Can I give your blind side to the fact that Lauren Arnell decided that Ella Heads, she of no discernible midfield or tagging experience, would be the 100% game time matchup for Jazz Garner, and just go forth into the world inside forward 50, do whatever you like. Like, I honestly think there were times where Jazz Garner was spending more time ahead of the ball and could not be stopped, but maybe not even couldn't be stopped. No one appeared interested in stopping her.
It's also allowed Jazz Garner to now be the all-time leading goal scorer in the AFLW, which is pretty impressive for a player who has spent the latter half of their career as a midfielder for pretty much the whole time. But yes, Jazzy Garner, very happy with that as my skipper. My blind side is something we're going to talk about at length a bit later on, which is Bonnie Toogood's 2-week suspension. I had some trade plans, which I had to shuffle around, and we'll talk about them later, of course, as we always do. But it's going to be a big talking point during the week. Do people hold? Do people trade in? It's an interesting one. But 2 weeks for a tackle that received a holding the ball free kick, it's going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, at the time of recording, it's Monday night, so we saw this news come out like an hour and a half ago, maybe. So TBC, if it gets appealed and it stays. But yeah, right now looking pretty concerning for our sides, given Toogood is quite highly owned. That would be 57%, just so I'd get that live there. So yeah, problematic for sure. Next up is me. I get the award for most improved this week, up 4,100 spots to finish in the top 2,500, which is quite nice because I put up a big 1,500 plus score like the rest of us. So pretty happy with that. I feel like it just hides the crap from round one, and now I'm in a respectable position and we start from here. So let's pretend that first round didn't happen. Although my bad call being my ruck curse continues. My gosh, this is actually just laughable. So I had Reed as my R2 in round one, who got an 8. Caitlin Reed, and I went, well, obviously it's round one, I need cash gen options, so you've got to go. Reed proceeded to put up a 39, which is lovely. Great for her. Very happy for that. Not so much for me because I traded her to Basenko, who got a 6.
So now you've got to target someone who's going to score a 4 this week.
I don't even know what to do. I'm actually just going to leave it there and be like, you can't do... I'm just not going to do anything at all because you can't do worse than that. So 2 single digits for my ruck to second ruck in 2 weeks. That's great. My good call, though, was just having Montana Ham in general. 133 is fantastic, and that really boosted up my fantasy score. I mean, there was a lot of very high scores this week, and I was fortunate to have a few of them, but Montana Ham did not see a number of that caliber coming, so that's fantastic. And, yeah, my blind side was that Noffy had a very quiet first 3 quarters, on largely driven by Adelaide having a very quiet first 3 quarters of the final game there, which was making a lot of coaches quite nervous, I imagine, as their captain is coming into the final game and not doing particularly well after we've seen a lot of very high scores earlier in the week. So we did see Adelaide and Noffy pull it all together in the final quarter, though, and absolutely smash the game. But this does make me wonder, is there something more going on at Adelaide? So that'll be, I'm not going to change my captain anytime soon, but I think that requires a bit more thinking there. And I'll throw to Liam for both Liam and the free kick team.
Yeah, it feels kind of rough that I've got a round rank of 854 and somehow I'm the one who has to go last. Because I'm at 15. I had a 15-18, so overall rank is up to 2.2K, up 3,658. Good call was holding Ash Riddell, given I'd considered trading out premium midfielders to get some cash to try and get Zali Goldsworthy. My bad call was trading Laura Gardner. I had like 2 structured sets of trades. The other one had seen me, you know, downgrade ruck to Havana Harris and kept my premium midfielders, done all the same thing. And it also would have seen me bring in Laura Stone, which would have been lovely. I then traded out Ash Gardner to Georgia Patrikios, which was fairly miserable to watch that Sydney game. But I would like to say that my blind side is honestly how bad Gold Coast are. Like, to allow Malloy to kick 7 goals, have 17 disposals. Montana Ham had 27 touches, 10 marks and 2 goals. Laura Gardner, in lowish time on ground, I think it was somewhere in the low 70s, with 38 disposals, a goal, 3 marks and 10 tackles. Truly confounded me. It was one of the most lopsided performances of all time, and I got, you know, burnt as a result. So I can only blame myself and how I've read those things, but my God, Sydney dominated. And I know that we just said that, like, they're a hot team at the moment. But also, I think they might be playing two of the four worst teams in the comp so far.
I mean, trading Gardner was a choice.
Thank you.
But
yes.
Also, I think we do need a rolling kitty for every time we talk about the trades that we could have done and how good that would have been for our side. Because there is nothing I find more boring than hearing people talk about the trades that they were going to do that they didn't do.
I know that you might find it boring, but it just really speaks to my frustration for the weekend. Then in terms of the free kick team, Installerine, they had a 15-16. Good call with bringing Fish on field. Bad call was trading in Hayley McLaughlin and not Laura Stone. And then Blindside, and this is the same as for me, is having Erica O'Shea on the bench and fielding Wrench instead. So that was certainly frustrating.
Yep, we can take turns living vicariously through our drafted Installerine team.
It's doing better than you and I, Mel. It's
excellent.
It's 1,841 rank.
To be fair to that team, had you told us last week it was going to score a 1,500, I'd assume it was winning the league. It's kind of crazy that it's the fifth best on this podcast, let alone across the entire league.
That is true. And, I mean, that brings us into the watch and wait scoreboard for a ridiculous high score, Will.
Yes, the watch and wait scoreboard, by goodness, was there a lot of watching and a lot of waiting this week. Philip C has taken the lead with the top score. The Bangkok Brewers have scored 1,715 points. That is an incredible number. Philip's team is on 3,048 points overall in the lead. In terms of the top 100, keep pace. You need a round score of 1420, which was well up from the 1355 last week. And Brian's team, Woody's winners, are currently sitting at 100th after scoring a 1594 this week, much like our good friend Jono.
Oh, yeah.
Which brings them to a total of 2,875 points. So that's your margin that you need to get to at the moment. In terms of our free kick league update, Blake H's team she plays currently still sits in first place for the free kick league and third overall. So well done, Blake. A massive 16-53. Fantastic effort there. Only 41 points shy, Philip. And I am very excited because my scores this week has got me into the top 100 of our free kick league. So I think that's the most important update overall.
That's exciting. Hopefully you stay there. That'd be fun to report on. So the hot topics this week, there's a few things that we really do need to talk about. The first one we've got here is just fantasy priorities as a general concept. So two rounds in, a sixth of the way through the season already, but this feels like it's not playing out as the same type of season and the same type of strategy that we would normally have. First of all, the fantasy points are already up after 2 weeks. It is only 2 weeks, but the average fantasy point scoring per team is about 35 points up to 1,083 from last season's average. The low is lower, but the high is higher. So we're seeing some fantasy some teams just have absolutely massive fantasy scores, and I guess we want to be anchoring our teams potentially a bit more towards these. Of the high-value players, not that many of them have dropped. So of the 47 highest owned players, only 12 of them have dropped in value this season.
Yeah, so of those 12 that you mentioned that have dropped in value, I think that includes players like Marinoff, Strom and Thomas, who I think it'd be harsh to say they've failed. I don't think they've succeeded, but you know they definitely haven't put up terrible scores for anyone's team. Thomas and then five of those...
Thomas has also only dropped 10K as well, so it's massive loss.
Thomas is one of the five players who've dropped less than 30K. So there's a lot of high ownership that has really made a lot of money. So when you look at the top highest, you know, dollar changes for the season, Zippy Fish is 65% owned, Montana Ham 41%, Jess Wrench 52% owned. Like, I feel like everyone's fantasy team is making a lot of money at the moment. And to me, it's very interesting how this is going to affect the season, because I feel like, you know, usually this is round two. What we're trying to do is just build our cash generation. I'm looking at rookies every week and I'm trying to build that cash so that by the end of the season, I've got all the money. The question to me is what, with all this high cash that's going in and our team value going up, I'm now wondering, should the priority still be on the cash generation, or am I now needing to look at, you know, fixture, making sure I get the big scores on field every week, kind of prioritizing scoring well now as opposed to later down the line?
Like, I think that given the, you know, we've seen 2 weeks of data, but there are now a handful of teams forming where if you go up against them, almost everyone is scoring well. I think that probably a little bit more sideways fixture-based trading earlier in the season is going to be a more prominent strategy this year. And I was thinking about this on the weekend as well. You know, the first couple of seasons that we've had the platform going, we've had some reason to kind of alter our strategy as the season went along. So in season one, we're only playing 10 weeks and cash cycles moved extremely fast. And so with that shorter season, there was a case to be made that you kind of, you know, just allowed things to happen for the first couple of weeks and then it was upgrade and it was, you were getting a completed team right at the end of the year, maybe with two rounds to go. Last year, we had the double game weeks. We've radically altered the way that we were playing the game. Like, the first month was about structuring so that you could still improve your side and score well in those middle rounds. And then once we got past about round six, no one really had rookies on field anymore. So it was, how can I navigate the double game weeks and still get the best players, all the most, you know, the highest scoring players on field? And it was also only, it was only 10 weeks worth of trades, even if it was 11 games. This year we have 12 games, so it's, and 12 sets of trades to do, which is the longest we've ever had. And now we're sitting here going, we've got a bumper rookie crop who've all excelled and made instantaneous cash. We've got, you know, some really good matchups for some teams early that where we've had a lot of players in them as well. Perfect example is Sydney. Do we need to be altering? Do we need to be, like, as I genuinely believe, target people that are playing up against Gold Coast in the next 2 weeks so that you can benefit off their complete ineptitude when it comes to stopping fantasy scoring? And I think that that's probably going to become true and true. And I mis-evaluated that. I probably should have been prioritizing getting in someone like Chloe Malloy. Yes, I know, like, I don't think we could have predicted 7 goals. That's outrageous, incredible, but probably not within the most predictable realm of outcomes. But more trades like that are going to be of increasing importance this year as a way to differentiate your team.
And I think it's actually a really nice combination. Like Johnny was mentioning at the start, our fantasy teams are more likely to be completed earlier. And we kind of spoke about that in our strategy episode as well, because of the amount of money we had and how many kind of underpriced players there were. But it also, it bears well with this idea that we want to be capitalizing on the fixture maybe earlier on in the season than we have previously. Because we've got such completed teams, we don't maybe need to do as many kind of like cash gen up trades. We can be fixture hopping kind of like we did last season for the double games, but not as forced. It's like optional fixture hopping to maximize the upside rather than like fixture hopping to as a necessity. So something like, you know, moving, obviously this is too good injury now, but like kind of swapping around decently scoring mids or like next rung below primos in the mids and the forward line to capitalize on fixture is actually a luxury that we kind of have at this point in the season, I feel. So I'm all for that.
Like, and I think that the kind of fixture hopping analogy with the double game weeks is a good one. As an example, though, and credit, sorry, DC, I'm going to throw your proposed trade plans from my DMs into the episode. But one to throw out there is Kiara Bowers out, given North Melbourne and Sydney in the next 2 weeks, and bring in Kate Hoare for a massive cash grab immediately for someone with a better role. If it had been last season or 2 years ago, it would have been a 9 out of 10 crazy play. I couldn't get behind it. But I think with this season, I see it as being maybe 5 out of 10 crazy. Like within the realms of reasonable possibility to try and get a piece of teams with really good runs, given the softness of the matchups. But all this talk of soft matchups did kind of get me thinking. How long until we see some of these teams radically change their approach to the game? Like, how much do we see the magnets just getting thrown around? Richmond, Gold Coast, Port Adelaide. We already saw Port Adelaide try something completely out of the box against North Melbourne. I'm wary, but like, as much as I was like just super confident then that you should be targeting players in these soft matchups, there is a part of me that as well thinks maybe we could get overconfident and coaches will start trying to change up what they're doing. And there's also a case to be made that with these new rule changes, coaches were probably going to adapt at different speeds or have game plans from previous seasons that were better suited to this more lateral hand pass and non-stoppage movement better than others. So I'm now just casting doubt on my own argument, but it's just like a thought that popped up that maybe we need to guard ourselves from overconfidence, because I feel like strategy changes are coming for some of these teams that have really struggled early.
I also think it's a very small sample space. So, I mean, we know North Melbourne's a known quantity, but when we talk about Sydney being restrictive, they've played Richmond and they've played Gold Coast, who I think we're comfortable saying are not high fantasy scoring teams this season. Last season, when we looked at Sydney, they were about middle of the pack for people scoring against them. So I'm not convinced that that's a bad matchup. I want to see it for a little bit longer, and I don't want to be too responsive to what we've seen. I just think the one thing that I'm thinking with this season is the type of player that I'm bringing in. Usually what I want is someone who's not going to have a floor score. So if I'm bringing in a forward, I want someone who I'm comfortable is going to go over 60 every week. But now I'm kind of thinking, well, do I need to be targeting someone who could have a massive game? Do I want someone who's got that 130 ceiling that Montana Ham just showed? Which I have to say is not a lot of players. It really limits the pool down a little bit.
Short of Will chiming in, I think the other thing that is becoming more apparent to me is the bench situation and the cash gen option. Like, obviously, my hands are a bit tied with my ruck too, but the idea of forcing a rookie trade to make some cash gen options, I'm like, you know what? Ash Centra had a poor week last week. Leave it there for another week, see what she does. Like, I'm just kind of happy for my bench to sit there and see what they do, because I have time. Like, I don't need them right away for cash options of, you know, cap, like, take that money from them and put them onto someone else, because we've got some pretty good options floating around. I just feel like we're a little bit less rookie cash gen focused than, at least for myself, than I have been in previous seasons. Do you guys feel the same? Or is this something I'm going to come to regret later?
No, I actually really agree with that. I think that Liam kind of hinted it at before, which was in our earlier seasons of AFLW fantasy, if you had a player on the bench that wasn't making you money, it was a dead spot. You were wasting your time. And this year, our rookies have gone really well. We seem to have a lot of different options for how you can structure your team. It's probably less important than it's ever been to be having players churn over the money on the bench. Yes, it's still very good to have those players churning over money on the bench, but I think the important thing is having the right players. Zippy Fish is obviously a very important one that a lot of people are now saying, I can probably get her on the field because she's averaging 96 and she'll make money and score me points. That's great. Jess Wrench, another really popular one, scoring reasonably well in the back line. If you've got her, great. If she's on field, that's fine. If she's not on field, so what? She'll just make you a bit of money. So I think that, especially if we're doing lateral trades, having those big earning rookies isn't as important as it has been in recent years, but it's still important. I think in a fantasy game, it's still important to have cast gen. It just doesn't need to be as immediate as it has previously been, because I remember from our earlier seasons, we'd have players that would go up maybe 20 grand and we'd be thinking, great, that might be a pivotal amount that's going to get us to our next person. And now, it, you know, they can just sit there.
Yeah. Zippy Fish has gone up so much. I can't believe it's, you could almost sideways her to Kate Hoare at this point. Yeah. It's crazy that that's an option.
Well, speaking about being a little bit more flippant with cash gen and happy to just have some of it sit there and whatnot, Bonnie Toogood's 613K is a lot of money to be holding for someone who is potentially not going to be playing for 2 weeks. And I think this warrants a bit of a discussion around who might we trade her for if we're trading her out, or is that something you're happy to stomach? So that kind of brings us into our Believe It or Not, where we have a look at the pop scores that we had last week. Do we think they're going to stay, or do we think that they're just a flash in the pan? For the defenders, we saw a really big week for Harriet Cordner, as well as Izzy Grant and Elizabeth Georgiou-Stathis, particularly on Elizabeth Georgiou-Stathis' mid-roll. Are you guys thinking of trading in any of these players, or is it too good to be true?
I already have Elizabeth Georgiou-Stathis, so I won't be trading her in. I'll be happily keeping her in my team. It was a strange one because that was a tagging role on Mon Conti, who ended up still getting quite a bit of the ball. So the tag wasn't overly effective, even though the Bulldogs did win that match. Lots of tackles to Elizabeth Georgiou-Stathis. Looked reasonably good when she had the ball, even though she did turn it over a little bit. It was very different to her role in the first week. And I think with the way she's playing at the moment, it kind of doesn't really matter where she's playing.
Yeah, I mean, I think the important thing is that they won the game over Richmond. And to be honest, I think she was way more effective in there doing a negating role and still getting plenty of the ball compared to Dom Carruthers, whose role she took over in that middle. So I'm thinking there's a good chance it sticks around. I mean, even just this week, I think the Hawks midfield's a bit depleted. I could see a tag coming against Emily Bates.
Yeah, I think it's definitely an option. I think Georgiou-Stathis is one of these players that's a very good player wherever they play on the field, so I wouldn't be too worried about, what that role is. And if they're in and around the ball getting lots of tackles, we know tackles are great for fantasy points.
6 turnovers and 38.7% disposal efficiency.
Which is the same thing I said last week. I don't care where the ball goes as long as she's getting it.
I know. It's great. Fantasy number go up is all good, but it is not helpful that I don't think she's a clearance player and she's not a good ball user, because the other like higher disposal getting players who also have bad disposal efficiency are clearance players. So it's Woodland, McCarthy, Shearer. These are the types of players where you can kind of weigh their disposal efficiency up against their clearance work. And I don't think Georgiou-Stathis does that. And then the other thing I wanted to mention, Izzy Grant, great score. But I think that's in part due to Georgiou-Stathis moving into the midfield and going up against Richmond, who really didn't do much to actually get good entries inside 50, and Grant was able to benefit. So I think that if you're going for either of them, like Georgiou-Stathis is going to be the better scorer. I wouldn't be trading into Grant because I'm concerned that that role only comes about because Georgiou-Stathis is playing in the midfield, and we're not certain how long that'll last.
Two other interesting things. Firstly, with Izzy Grant, scored a 25 the previous week against Melbourne. So that's the kind of what John was saying before, where 82, great ceiling, 25, not so great floor. And the other thing is she actually had 5 freeze 4, Izzy Grant, on the weekend. So plenty of kicks from that. So that may have boosted her scoring a little bit up. So I'm pretty happy with my back line. So it's not something I really need to consider that much anyway. But it's probably not a play I'd be looking at this stage.
Well, let's head on over to the midfield then. We've got Ash Riddell with her 43 disposals to start off with.
Not worth it.
Bad footballer.
No one should trade into her. already 18% owned, but I mean, I can definitely see that number going up there. The question is, I mean, would anyone be considering the move that you did last week, Will, which is Noffy out, Riddell in as your C lock, or Garner, if that's the path you've already gone down? I believe we all have Riddell. Is anyone considering
I don't have Riddell.
Yeah, neither.
Oh, well.
It's just you and me, Mel, we got to enjoy.
Maybe you and me in the 2,000 to 3,000 ranks situation.
Maybe I should be trading Jazz Garner to Ash Riddell this week just for that little extra.
Good sideways.
Just for an chaos. Extra sideways. Cash gen.
So one thing I want to mention on North is I actually think that their ball movement changed pretty substantially from what we saw against Geelong. And Garner kicked 6, playing against an opponent that she should never have had. But I think part of that becomes Garner spends more time ahead of the ball because the transition from D50 to forward 50 was so bad the week before that I think that was part of the toolkit for Darren Crocker. And that also benefits Riddell, who instantaneously becomes the number one clearance player, disposal getter for North Melbourne. I won't be shocked if it's really high to possession games for the rest of the year for Riddell, for so long as Garner spends maybe a little bit time, less time midfield, so more time on the ground, but more time resting forward.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And to me, for those who are looking to do what Will's done and jump off Marinoff, this is the last week you can go down to Riddell and still make money, because I imagine next week it's going to be much closer in price, which is a little scary to see. So, this week I'm trying to get off Bonnie Toogood. I'm needing a little bit of cash to go up. That's one of the things that I'm toying with, is if Riddell comes in and becomes my new default captain, you know, I can afford a much better class of forward than I otherwise would be if I was just going straight sideways.
Yes, that is true. And speaking of some other very big midfielders there, we were really excited for Shelley Heath, having played in the midfield the week before. But Melbourne's midfield gang put up some absolutely massive scores as well. Tyler Hanks notably putting up a 126 after a 125 the week before. That is consistently high. What are you guys thinking? I mean, I know you mentioned Hall before as a trade-in target. And is Hanks, who's quite fairly priced then, also an option?
Probably a little bit expensive, in my opinion, now, just because she's bumped up immediately twice. But I think the thing that I'm really drawing from it, and same applies for Gardner, is we're seeing a certain type of midfielder really benefit from these new rules. It is players with extremely fast hands, low to the ground, who have quick hand to foot as well, really benefiting, but also playing in obviously good teams with good systems that are built for this style of ball movement. It will be fascinating to see if this stands up for the whole season, but at the very least, I'm feeling somewhat like vindicated in my first level of analysis from the preseason, which is like, I want handball receive players. And so far it's been the handball receive players who are really killing it scoring wise this year.
Yeah. And I guess the other player briefly to touch on, Amy Gaylor, is someone else we were also quite excited for coming into this season. Our interviewee from earlier in the preseason, absolutely looking phenomenal as that breakout year in the midfield. Up to 810K now, though, so gone up quite a bit, quite expensive. Maybe someone you could jump on potentially, but we suspect, given that we've seen a pretty consistent scoring there, that she would be one to stay. Over to the Rucks, where Will and I desperately need a lot of help. We've got Liz McGrath, who is looking pretty good in that solo Ruck role. What do you reckon?
Yeah, Liz McGrath's been my main trade target this week, beyond my forward woes, mainly just because I think she's one of the few Rucks available that has a bit of money to make, because I don't have a huge amount of money to jump up to one of the genuine premium ones. I'm basically looking at either her or Matilda Dyke from Essendon, who's been quite impressive and unfortunately has taken the points away from Courtney Murphy, who I was hoping would score a little bit more, but instead scored a 26. And I've gone for McGrath simply because my other trades leave me with only 2K left if I get McGrath, so I don't have the extra 20K to get up to Matilda Dyke. But I think McGrath has quite clearly got the role at West Coast. I think they're much happier with her as the ruck ahead of Wakfa and Lakai. So I think that even if she doesn't necessarily continue scoring highly, I think there's quite a lot of scope for her to continue averaging around that 60 mark.
And I think you get the advantage of knowing before by the time team sheets come out, whether or not Daisy Pierce is going to Daisy Pierce and bring in a different ruck, as she has done, you know, half the rounds we've ever seen her coach West Coast. Looked great in the ruck, but Matilda Dyke thoroughly smashed Liz McGrath around the ground, and West Coast are shaping as the worst centre clearance team in the comp at the moment. So, like, I think on balance, positive signs for McGrath, but there are some risk elements to it, and I think that's reflected in the price. And for someone who will, like, I think we can see why you don't want to trust Courtney Murphy. Like, she was beaten in the ruck and beaten around the ground. So, like, I think making that kind of trade makes sense from that perspective. But, you know, there are, it's not without some, like, pink flags, let's call them.
Can I just check one thing with you, Liam? West Coast definitely lost the centre clearances handily in the first round. Who do you think won the centre clearances between West Coast and Essendon?
Ooh.
Because I'm looking at the app here and it was West Coast 4-3. Yeah.
I take that back. I think the Bombers dominated the post.
Yeah, stoppage clearances, it was one-way traffic, that's for sure. But centre clearance, I just needed to pull you up on that.
No, you fairly pull me out. It was the first round where they were destroyed in centre clearances, and then against the Bombers, it was clearances around the ground. But basically, West Coast are shaping as a less than spectacular clearance team at the moment. So good to have good ruck that does not lose hit outs, but maybe for naught if it doesn't result in ball go right way for team.
Yeah, and I think for me, Liz McGrath is quite clearly a stepping stone player if you are doing the rookie ruck strat like I have, where hopefully she can make another 100, 200K if she keeps scoring reasonably well, and then I can use that to get up to a premium ruck towards the latter half of the season with much less of a jump than going from Courtney Murphy.
There's something interesting happening here, which I think we'll need to talk about on a later episode because we have babbled on a lot already. But Alice Edmonds, Breanne Harrington and Talia Hickey, three of the quite established rucks who were fairly well priced, quite expensive at the start of the season, so not something we talked about a lot as ruck options, but are now popping up as consistent high scorers in the rucks. So let's put a bookmark in that one and come back and talk more about these established rucks later, because there is too much juicy in the forward line that we must talk about now.
But please, miss, could I make one more point? Mimstrom might be rucking against no established ruck this week because Kim Rennie went down with an injury against Port. Emma King isn't confirmed to return just yet,
though is expected back this week, just to put a little flag there.
If she's not back, would you forego Ash Woodland to bring in Mim Strom, and that's what you'd use your cash on? So go Bonnie down to cheapo.
I trust Ariana Hetherington to quash Mim Strom.
She is Ariana Goderington. She is a well-known dominator. I'm fully with you. Forget I said anything. Mel, forwards.
Ariana Hetherington is one of my now absolute favourite players, so I fully expect that. But the forward line, Mel, you've touched on it. It's an interesting area this week.
Yeah, so we've got Megan Kaufman in a half-forward role, who scored very well. We've got Vicky Wall, who's the closest in price to Too Good, so makes a reasonable jump over if you had if you wanted to do a one-for-one. We've got Ash Woodland, who's now in a mid-role, priced a bit more expensive but looking juicy. And Chloe Malloy, who just smashed a very large amount of goals last week for a huge score. We've also got Tani Evans, who is still in the forward line but doing big things. And another couple of names, which I won't go into. These are all really juicy options. Which ones do we think are sustainable and which ones are we considering trading into?
I'm actually looking at a player that hasn't been listed, but similar to Eden Zanka was Taylor Harris, who was best on ground this week. Kicked 4 goals, 4, so could have had an even bigger game, 114 points. And the reason why is the point that you made about Vicky Wall, close money to Too Good, so only 677, starts at a pretty low price. Coming up against the Pies this week, which is a pretty nice matchup. We saw Tani Evans start very, very well against the Pies. I think it's a good play, and I think it's one of those things where I don't really mind if it's not sustainable. We've talked a lot about these sideways trades we can do. I'm happy to let Melbourne's reasonably good fixture for the next few weeks hopefully give Taylor Harris a bit of points and hopefully a bit of money, which might give me a chance to move sideways to someone else. The other player that I am targeting is the player that, according to the run sheet, we are once again all targeting the same forward, which is Ash Woodland. That midfield role looks really, really good. And Liam has rightly pointed out, look for players who are playing against Gold Coast.
Yeah, that's a double whammy for Woodland, really. I mean, even if she wasn't going up against Gold Coast, the role is enticing. So she's definitely what I'm going to be targeting. Liam, I can see you.
Just wanted to say the lowest score from someone playing Ash Woodland's role in games so far against Gold Coast is Lucia Painter's 95. Five scores, lowest of 95, and then And then, you know, we've got Montana Ham scoring 133.
Yep. I'll take 95.
I'd take 133, personally.
Yeah, you know, if push comes to shove, I'll take the bigger one, please.
Tani Evans is a tricky one because I just traded in Zali Goldsworthy, and I feel like I know they're not necessarily cannibalizing each other's scoring, but I just feel like I've got too many players from one team potentially in one line because I've also got Grace Kosh as my on the bench at F6 there, and I can't have three GWS forwards. that just sounds like a disaster. Is anyone seriously considering Tani?
I seriously considered Tani last week, and midway through the GWS Collingwood game, Jono can attest I was pulling my hair out at quarter time. I actually got a message in a group chat where Jono said, "How long until Will says I should have picked Tani Evans instead?" And the reason I saw that message was because I opened my phone to send that very message. but yeah, Tani Evans has looked fantastic in the role. They have had a reasonably easy fixture so far. I mean, they obviously got smashed by Essendon and then lost to Collingwood, and it's probably only going to get more difficult from there. I think she's still going to be a good pick. I don't think she's necessarily going to be the great pick that we need at this stage. As we've said, there's a lot of sideways movements, and considering you can get a player like Ash Woodland for only 40K more, or you can go down to, say, an Eden Zanker for nearly 100 grand less, I think there are probably options I'd look at instead.
Yeah, I was just about to say, have we considered going down even cheaper and picking a rookie in Laura Stone, who looked to have an excellent role against Carlton, and I really feel like could be the play. Just, you know, with the midfield time, the tackling, which I really liked, it feels as though this could be a cheapie. If it's not for Bonnie, if it's for sidewaysing Brooke Tonnen, Darcy Vesio, who... one of them scored all right, the other one has not scored so well so far. I think that that's a bit of a... it's almost a bit of a free hit, and if we didn't have Bonnie out, it would be something that I reckon more people would be looking to do.
Yeah, I think if you're not looking to get one of the, like, genuine premiums, or you are looking to move into that rookies, I think that that's not a bad option, and she's probably a rookie that you can probably play on field.
Yeah, which brings us into the third part of the Hot Topics, which is the kids are really all right and very suitable to be played on field. We've got some rookies that I'm surprised that we're saying we're very comfortable to leave them on field going into round three already. Laura Stone definitely being one of them. Blathan Bogue being the other forward who is very reasonable to be leaving on field with her 46 average. We've also got Jess Wrench, who we've spoken about at length last week as well, in the back line with a 58.5. Rebecca Ott, interestingly, from St Kilda with a 57. And Kayla Forbes, who has kind of snuck up on me, with a 59.5 as the back line. These are, like, some seriously good options and scoring higher than some of the other defenders that we might have paid up a little bit more for. Will, with your little snakey in the air there, which of these are you considering putting on field?
Yes, I was trying to get the attention because Kyla Forbes is a player that has gone very much under the radar as a defensive option. In the back line, obviously a lot of attention has been given to Jess Wrench, but Kyla Forbes has just quietly put together a good start in both a game that they won and a game that they got smashed in, and scored pretty consistently both times. So scored a 58 and a 61. So an average of 59.5 is enough for me to put her on field over Jess Wrench this week. I think there's just a little bit more consistency there, which means that invariably Jess Wrench is going to score big and Forbes won't this week. That's just how playing rookies on field works. Mm. But yeah, the one that a lot of people have obviously been talking about is Zippy Fish. I've moved to put Zippy Fish on the field, scoring very, very well. You want to take a 96 average. That's pretty good. And the other ones, of course, are the rucks. Your number one rookie ruck is, of course, Zoe Bisanko.
Caitlin Reid, number two.
But yeah, Havana Harris started fantastically against West Coast. Struggled a bit more against Sydney, which isn't that much of a surprise given how one-sided that match was. But I think will still be a very, very good player if you are continuing to run with Havana Harris. So, you know, there's plenty of options to play rookies across all of your lines.
And it opens up a lot of cash. For anyone that didn't start with Zippy Fish on field in their starting squad and had five more established midfielders, like, I'm toying with which of my midfielders do I trade out so that Zippy can go on field and essentially downgrade all the way to a rookie on the bench. And boy, that opens up a lot of cash. It is annoying that I haven't done this up until now because it means she's scored 90-something on my bench 2 weeks in a row. But very, very excited for the opportunity. But it does leave a question of, like, if I'm going to be doing that, say a Georgia Paspakis or a Bowers down to a rookie who's going to sit M6, who are some of the options that are left that we've seen hit the ground running as a rookie that we can put some money into and just keep that cash gen up? Because Lord knows that's what I need right now.
And I'll just quickly jump in there by saying what you suggested then is exactly what I've planned on doing this week to make some money, which is Gab Newton didn't do a huge amount this week. Another tough matchup against North. Trade her out, and it allowed me to not get a rookie in this case, but actually get Liz McGrath, who we talked about before, who is kind of just moved out of rookie, but there are plenty of rookies still available. Tessa Boyd scored really, really well for North Melbourne this week. Scored, I think it was a 72 as a defensive option if you are looking to get a defender. Nisa Dooley scored a 50 for Brisbane as well in your forward line if you're looking for a forward rookie, and has a reasonably good matchup as well against Carlton.
Tessa Boyd is the one that I think I'm probably most interested in. Nicole Bresnahan sounds like she'll miss 5 to 6 weeks. I'm just annoyed that North didn't run with this earlier, so we had a bit more time to react to it. She was a late in, but someone who'd being talked about very early as having made a big impression at the football club was easily going to be someone who fit in seamlessly. She was exceptional, took more running bounces than I was expected. Comes in as that, like, that perfect VFLW experienced player with scoring pedigree, averaged in like the mid to high 70s for a couple of seasons at VFLW level with some solid like 100, 110 ceiling games. And given she came in as a 300k player, capable of, and she's already kind of scored a 71, her price is reasonable now, but I expect that if we had break evens, hers would be extremely low. She could be someone that is almost a priority trade in this week. The bigger question is just which other cash generators would you otherwise trade out to make it happen? That's my biggest conundrum this week, because like I'm looking at my team, like, okay, I'm not ranked extremely highly, and all I did was make my team worse this past week by trading out 156 or whatever it was.
65.
No. I didn't trade out Riddell.
Oh, no, sorry. It was 154 for Gardner. That's right.
Mm. Yeah, see, I know. Like, I won. I won from my potential trade plans. but I'm looking at my team going, like, outside of F4 and F5, which are traditionally our worst scoring spots, my team isn't looking terrible. Not many people are failing. Therefore, I think it's going to be a conundrum for a lot of people. Mel, you were talking about with your midfield. For me, it's like, do I want to trade out a near premium defender to bring in Boyd if she's going to make 200, 300k in 2 weeks so that I can then deploy that cash elsewhere, upgrade my forward line, and probably still be getting decent enough scoring in defense? I don't have an answer to that question. It's just like what I'm struggling with at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's the sort of tough decisions that I'm looking at are whichever one of Jess Wrench and Rebecca Ott I don't play on field, I'm probably trading just because I think that early cash gen is quicker. So I'd rather get on Tess Boyd a little bit earlier. But it seems crazy to be trading either of those two players out because they've got a lot of money to make still.
Yeah, and we talked a lot about the defenders. Another player who, given they were playing against North Melbourne, I'm going to give them a lot of credit. If you're looking for a midfield downgrade, was Jez Souden from Port Adelaide. Managed to score a reasonable 45 playing in a sort of half-forward role, which against North Melbourne is no mean feat. But comes up against Gold Coast this week, so for all we know, we could be getting a rookie score another 100.
Playing that perfect role too, we're just denied her being able to bring her in the forward line because that's the role she's playing at the moment, and I can't, I'm not going to look it up and waste everybody's time, but I reckon she'd be close to leading rookies for marks at the moment, just with the role that she's playing. I thought she's looked really good. A reasonable trade-in option if we're just going to search for the pop scores. I think Gold Coast playing the role she is could be perfect. And maybe we need to be considering Gemma Houghton. Maybe she'll score 11 goals this week. Like, who knows?
Yeah, I think the other one is if we are sticking with the forward line, Laura Stone, we talked to her about a little bit earlier, but that also came with 4 free kicks against. I'm pretty sure all of them were holding the ball and they were all used in that breakdown of these are the ridiculous holding the ball decisions on the weekend. If she gets a good run just 1 week, I think that could be a very, very big score.
2 behinds as well. So kick a couple of goals and get rid of those freezer kicks and she's probably got 100 there.
Well, it's not just two behinds, it's 2 posters. She hit one on each side of the post.
Nice. I was going to say, we kind of like segued into this being like Laura Stone, good option instead of Duguid. And then we didn't have an opportunity to talk about her. So is she who you're going to be bringing in?
At the moment,
for Duguid.
Yes.
Have you got Woodland already?
No, but I'm doing another trade. You know how you were saying you were going to potentially get rid of one of your defenders? I think my plan at the moment is to switch McCormick out of the side because... as good as she's been, it stresses me that she has on a poor score at halftime and then she dominates the last quarter to come back in. I can't be doing it for my heart. So I think I might switch her around to the forward line.
Yeah, like I think that that's a fair play. My one I'm potentially looking at is Serene Watson, if only because I think there are just some more scorers in defence at the moment. I think that Ella Friend has scored more than I was expecting. Kyla Forbes has popped up as... you know, let's call her a mini Daisy Darcy. Now, Daisy Darcy is obviously already very small, but like lovely left foot kick, which are there any good left foot kicks at St Kilda? I actually don't think they have any. So like she really stands out from that perspective. So I'm considering Stone in, trying to like find a way to, you know, get Stone, get Boyd and get Woodland as like my priority trade targets this week. It's just how do I fund it? And it might be a premium defender who is scoring above what they were priced at just to make it all work.
Now, outside of the trades, the other big decision we need to make is our captain's corner, which has been quite brief up until now. It's been Noffy, move on. But Liam, you've got something more to shed, more to discuss than just C or Noffy.
Yeah, well... I think that at the moment we're still running relatively red dot free. I feel like with some of the scores that have been on the bench, there's probably a few still out there, but Noffy now hasn't been the highest scorer for the round twice. 129, you take that as your captain, if you VC'd it, that's what you would take. But I think it's probably worthwhile putting a little bit more time and effort into your captains. And I feel like maybe downgrading Noffy for cash is going to be more of a play. She is still ranked number one, if only because of the domination that she has inflicted upon GWS every time that she has played them in the last 4 seasons, scoring 177, 174, 148, and 147 in each of the last 4 seasons. Just an insane run.
Just ridiculous.
And like, I will just say, though, I'm not expecting 170 because I think in 3 of those 4 games, she's had like more than 12 tackles. I don't know if that's going to happen in this new iteration of the AFLW. In terms of who else I have, I've got Riddell next up against Fremantle and then Garner. Garner, I may waver on. Depends on how I feel about her time potentially spent forward. I feel like Ash Brazel sitting on her in the forward line or Emma O'Driscoll is a much better matchup than what Port were rolling out on the weekend.
You'd hope so.
In terms of number 4, at the moment I've got Kate Hoare, but I'm actually going to swap it. I'm going to put in Tyler Hanks there. I think she's scoring incredibly. But I think one of those 2 Melbourne midfielders up against Collingwood this week could go absolutely enormous, particularly if Kate Hoare does what I feel like she could do and kick a bag of goals and still spend a bulk time in the midfield because they're going to need her there. I feel like that's a great play as a VC. Well, actually, you can't really go as a VC, unfortunately, but possibility to go massive this week. And then the final one is Abby Dowrick against Gold Coast. We've just kind of seen, you know, good midfielder against the Suns. It is the play of the week. Abby Dowrick is scoring at classic Abby Dowrick levels, which is mid-80s, but I feel like a pop score this week is absolutely incoming. She'll get a chance to tackle. She'll get a chance to, you know, kick to her heart's content, probably even get some marks in transition, which she is reticent to do at Port Adelaide for game plan reasons. I think that there are definitely going to be some high scores in that Port Adelaide game.
Yes, that's going to be an interesting one. It's been quite nice and easy not really having to think about captains until now, at least
and
for me.
And we don't really have... I personally still don't have a red dot. The only possibility is Grace Kosh, who was sore in the first quarter against Collingwood, went off the ground. I then like scarpered over to the bench to see what was going on. She kind of came up out of the rooms midway through quarter time, got some ice spray on her knee, got it strapped up, and then played out the rest of the game. The only problem is she plays the first game of the she plays the second game of the round. So isn't a particularly helpful loop for us unless you feel spicy and want to put it on like Georgia Nanscorn if you're one of the few people that has her in your team.
Yeah, tricky.
I suspect that red dots are a little more common than we think because I've been looking at some of the top teams and take She Plays, who's first in our free kick league right now. They deliberately started the year with two donuts so that they could take, I think it was Wrench and then Fish on field after they'd, you know, started them on their bench. And I think there's a lot of teams that have done that with Havana Harris as well. I reckon it'd be more common than we'd expect. There'd be people taking a couple looks at it.
Yeah. And that might just be the specter of my own team clouding my belief on how many red dots you have. And like, I don't want to, you know, it was certainly a good week to pick captains last week. Like, the lowest score I got was a 98 from my top five in the article. Now, that was Moncon who got tagged. And then the rest of them were all 129 and above. So I'm happy with what I've done there. But it's definitely going to be something we have to manage more now. Because Noffy isn't quite the same player at the moment as our Adelaide. They're just not quite the same dominant team.
Well, why don't you run us quickly through your trade plans then, Liam, as we wrap up the episode.
Trade plans. Well, I, as has been now foreshadowed about 16 times, my number one trade priority is Ash Woodland. And the thing that I am going to look to avoid doing is trading out players who are going to score 150 plus scores. I think that you are all saved from another Abby Dowrick related crash out by the fact that I had I had Ash Riddell in my team. And the fact that I had the high scorer in the game also in my squad. Otherwise, I would have been
absolutely
depressed.
It was a close call.
What about you, Jono? Try and mix it up a bit.
Yeah, so I think at the moment my plan, I mean, I've already talked about them a lot, but bringing McCormick forward for Woodland to switch Wrench down to Tess Boyd. And then I think the plan at the moment is to go Bonnie Toogood across to Laura Stone. And that'll leave me with a little bit of cash to sort of do a bit of an upgrade next week as well. There's a small part of me that wants to do Ebony Marinoff out of my side. That last four against the Giants is making it very, very hard to convince myself to do it, though.
Oh, yeah. I haven't really considered Noffy out, but I'm thinking my current plans are Georgie Prasparkas, capitalize on the scores she's had down so that I can put Zippy Fish on field and get those 90 points off my bench. Butler needs to go. I'm not watching another 29 score on my field. She could probably go on my bench except Grace Kosh is question mark. So maybe I do something with the utility, not too sure. Too good out though, and I was currently thinking about Zenka, but... as always happens, I reconsider my trades five different times during this episode, so not too sure where I'm going to land. Have you changed your plans at all recently, Will?
Have I ever changed my plans recently? I've been looking at my point of weakness, which is currently no Noffy playing against GWS, because she's, as you said, Liam, scored 170 the last two times, which is worrying if you don't have her, it must be said. So Jono, I understand you may want to trade her out for a bit of money, but there's a chance she could be making money this week. But I have no real way to actually get Noffy into my team this week without throwing pretty much all of my structures out the window. So
have you considered trading out Laura Gardner?
I have considered trading out Laura Gardner. I was considering trading her to Abby Darrick just because that would be the most humorous way I could go.
Hey, it's the matchup for it this week. Do it.
It is the matchup for it. But currently it's fixing my forward line. Ange Stannard has to go. And Toogood being out means I've got what is as close to two donuts as you can possibly get. So with the money I make from trading Stannard, Toogood and Gab Newton out of my team, my current plans are to bring in Ash Woodland, Taylor Harris and Liz McGrath to also sort out that ruck position.
Well, I'd like to make a suggestion because I know you like a curveball and I regret that we didn't bring up this player earlier. I see you're trading out a Fremantle forward and I was wondering if I could interest you in a Fremantle forward.
I would love one.
Megan Kaufman has put up two good games against good opposition. I mean, I can't believe she scored over 70 against Brisbane's. It's a tough matchup against North, but then their fixture gets a lot better after that. They sort of started the year with all their difficult matchups, a lot like Geelong has, and then it just kind of clears up a little bit. So I don't think I'm going to target Kaufman this week, but next week is my you know, jumping point. And I just wanted to know if you wanted to get on a little early.
Look, if I'm going to trade into a Fremantle player, it's going to be Sarah Verrier. You should know that by now. But
this is the player that I thought would get brought up. She's scoring well on the wing.
She actually is scoring well, which is terrifying.
It's but terrifying. Yes,
if I so choose, I can theoretically, in order to get Marinoff into my team, I need to trade Fish and Toogood and keep Stannard on field. And I'm not sure I'm willing to do that.
No. I think that might be a stretch too far.
Yeah, exactly. It's the only way I can get enough money to get the 5,000 extra. Oh, sorry, it's even more than that. It's about 7,000 that I need to get Newton up to Marinoff. 177 as captain would be fantastic. It's a gamble that even I am not willing to take based on how Ange Stannard has been going.
Yes, very far. We would love to see you do it, though. So if you impulsively decide to do that, please let us know.
You know what? If you say it like that,
ignoring the fact that he's the top ranked coach on the podcast, willing to throw his season for content immediately. You love to see it.
Thank you, Will. Well, that has been our week two review, week three preview. Thanks for listening. You can find all of our free kick content at FreeKickWPod over on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and you can also check out our Substack for all of our written content. And we will join you later in the week for a Spaces Live to run through the team sheets. If not, chat to you more next week. Bye.
See ya.
See everyone.
Bye.